Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft.
Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. English 115F, Fall 2007, Vanderbilt University. Professor Jay Clayton, Professor Matthew Jed Hall. Visit our class blog at worldsofwordcraft.wordpress.com.
Let's talk about some concepts from Star Wars, for online Star Wars game, it's the Revenge of the Fans. I wasn't looking when Professor Hall asked how many people had read it.
Everyone.
Okay.
I read it.
So this was a game that I want to demonstrate for you in a second. It was really quite an amazing game. In fact, why don't I take control and show you Star Wars Galaxies before we go any further. Daniel, you all
cheer for the
library.
This is after the change, though.
Yeah, this is post-change. Are you all through with these photographs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to get us a little darker room space. Thanks for coming by and taking
it.
And what scene are we in? Are we in scene 6?
The one Ted loves so much.
Okay. So this is Mos Mesrek, a player city entirely designed. Every single structure you see here was put here in the game space by players, not by Sony. And it's one of the, I don't know if it's unique, it's certainly one of the unusual features of Star Wars Galaxies, is that you could build your own city anywhere in the game space, rather than off in a little private area, and you could build your own house in it. And we're going to show you different ways that houses are designed in three different games. This game, DAOC, and our new Lotro. There, I had 5 houses, and this was my smallest one, but it's the one I got most creative with. This is Chirrible's Library. I wish you could see the front of Chirrible. They changed the UI completely. I can't figure out how to get the camera to swivel around so that I can see that.
I have a couple Moncal photos in general.
Yeah.
Is it not a left mouse button hold down?
Yeah. Left?
And twist.
Wait. Say.
Hold down like this.
I don't have a mouse.
Yeah, just click on the thing and hold it and move around the touchpad.
I've tried doing that with every...
Star Wars Galaxy says an odd...
Oh, no, you see, it's I've tried everything.
Oh, nope.
You see, well, take a look at this great picture. What he is a purple frog, very overweight, and he's a level 90 Jedi. He's an elder Jedi, in fact, which means that he was leveled before they simplified the process and made noobs be Jedis from the day one.
It's
really
the trick.
A 90.
So why would you ask?
I don't know. out of curiosity.
In fact, the highest level used to be 80, and then they moved it to 90, and it was like that New York Times article, Chirrible's Rush to be 90. Chirrible Nickleby gets to have his full name displayed there. That's who he really is in life. And he built this library, which I can barely even get this character to move. For one thing, this computer is not strong enough. Okay. But here's his library. And what is unusual, if not unique, about this game interface is that not only could you build your house anywhere you wanted to, and not only did they have player cities, which had a mayor, had a guild hall, had a theater, had pubs, nightclubs, it had hospitals, which functioned in the game because you had to go there to get healed. so that you could build your own city with your own utilities that then players used in real game interaction as opposed to just being off in a little private space. Inside your house, it didn't have what any predetermined places where you had to put your furniture. You could put any object anywhere. And you could not only loot objects, but you could craft any object and put it anywhere in your house. And so you
mass
see...
Mass customization was a key part of the game experience within Star Wars Galaxies and a major, major design decision.
So you see that I've created bookshelves, each one individually designed. I created here a card catalog. Each, who wrote that
Sense
book?
Sense and Sensibility.
Jane Austen. Yeah. Good. I'm glad to have such a literate group at my
Pride and Prejudice.
Yes. Martin Chuzzlewit, Dombey and Son, David Copperfield, Bleak House, you get Hard Times, and you're getting to the really important one, Nicholas Nickleby.
Evil.
Wow.
So, I wonder if I could show you my character panel. I wonder if I can show you my biography that you could write. I don't know if those are various accomplishments. They've changed us so much that I can't.
You defeated the droid army?
I single-handedly. This guy was, well, he was elite. That's not. Where is the where are they? Where have they hidden the biography now?
401 Constitution.
Let's see if that works. It's sick.
That is sickening.
I know. This is their. They had mass customization of your character so that you not only were a Jedi, but you could choose which skills you wanted, and so that every single Jedi had different arrangements of skills from every other one, so that PvP became a really different kind of experience. This is never. I don't even want to tell you how pathetic this is. I'm trying to find
where nothing against Mark Hamill, by the way.
Yes. Let me see if I'll get it up.
Do people still play?
Oh, yeah.
They, you know, they dumbed it down profoundly so that it would appeal to the 14 and under sector.
Which they missed the market, though. Because
there's a book.
Because this was the generation that loved the Star Wars intellectual property. And this, what was it? I think it was Chris said, the old guys.
Yeah.
Those are the ones who like Star Wars the most. We grew up with Star Wars. I don't know what your generation's Star Wars is. That was my thing in the 70s and 80s. It's Star Wars. And there's got to be some comparable thing here. A lot of it's for, like, now it's Harry Potter, right?
Who wrote that book?
Charles Dickens?
No.
In cyberspace. Charles Dickens in cyberspace.
I guess I'm a professor.
I own an autographed copy of it. If that's
okay.
In fact, I wrote all of these books here. Pleasure of Babel, Romantic Vision in the novel.
Can you open those?
Charles Dickens in cyberspace.
Yeah, wait, can you read them?
Time in the Literary. And get this, Influence in Intertextuality and Literary History. Which is a topic we're going to be talking about shortly.
Oh, man.
Why is it not surprised?
Can you open these? Yes, you can open each and every one of these.
So you placed every single one of those books in there?
Indeed.
It's in three dimensions. It's they had to be crafted, named as a result of the crafting. An architect is the profession who crafts those items. Materials had to be extracted from the ground. It is a highly complex and customized system, which really lends itself to...
And then mathematical, you know, back 10...
Up 50.
Yeah, like that.
It's in three dimensions. You place your object within that space.
There. So Nicholas Nickleby currently has several... Ooh, a crate diamond pearl, which you put in your Jedi swords before they nerfed this game. and power crystals that you put in your Jedi sword before they ruin this game.
Matt, you hear what Matt said? I want you to hear this, Professor Clayton. Matt said so much resentment, and yes. This is very much to the topic we're gonna cover here.
How long would it take if you're designing every single thing?
Took months, years. To create this.
I built a whole city.
And he built an entire city.
With that level of customization in the interiors.
Not to brag or anything.
It's not to brag, it's just clinical reality. I don't know if that's something I want to brag about.
He built a whole city, and his guild lived in that city. And so, he had 40, 50 people in that city. Mos Mesrek, which is on Tatooine, which is my home city, was not one of... I was not part of Matt's guild, nor was I in his city, but this was the oldest and largest player-built city in the world, in the game space of here. And
my city was much more fun.
And his city was more fun because he built it. And this is the other room. This is where the great right creation goes on, you see. There's my desk. Okay, so... I wanted you to see what was possible. And one of the reasons that the article alludes to for the... I don't know if the article mentions this or not, but Sony certainly mentioned the problem with all this customization, meaning that this was an enormously expensive game for them to keep running because... to have this property in the midst of the game space as opposed to segregated off in a private area meant that, think of all the computing power and also all of the computing code that has to be debugged on a regular basis.
And one of the first things Professor Clayton and I did together is we flew out to San Diego and we met with all the engineers at Sony Online Entertainment to discuss this.
And that's right. And, you went in, they showed us two floors with literally hundreds of software people maintaining this one game. A very complex organization just to keep it up and running because, you run into this space, you're having a running battle with several creatures and, it's a group and there's all these people and then it has to generate the code not just for kind of standard activities but for the particular space that the players have created rather than the particular space that they have created and so they kind of own that space. Own it. Not, they own it, as we found out bitterly, they own it in terms of property, but I'm using own here now in a different sense, that they had to be responsible for spaces other people created, which caused significant problems for them. Shall I go to your city?
Time.
I mean, I could go while you took over the discussion of this article,
Let me compare it. Go ahead and head out and Chris or someone flip us over to the next.
What do I have?
There's a button in this, right?
Not that one, the other one.
Right there.
I want to show you a couple different housing instances so that you just have something to compare it to. Up here is Dark Age of Camelot. Now, key distinction here between these three worlds, there is a housing area. Right? Can everybody see the map okay here? This area is distinct and separate from the world in which gameplay actually occurs. This is very similar when we switch over to Lord of the Rings Online. Let me do this real quick. I should have them both up as long as I don't have a glitch. Let me get outside. I just bought my house. I'm going to get outside in the housing area. I'm going to draw some comparisons. Star Wars Galaxies, you actually touch the world in which gameplay occurred. So in our Yazoo City was the name of my city. We had running PvP battles. The first time Professor Clayton ever played PvP was in Yazoo City on a planet called Rory, and we had Imperial bases that the rebels were attacking attached to our city. And then we would run inside of our hospitals, repair ourselves, and then run out and fight again. So it's all persistent right in the world. Much different. Now, if you look at Lord of the Rings Online,
This is where my house is, One Chalk Street, and I can't remember the name of the district here we're in. Remember, Professor?
Yes, Elm Nook.
There we are. Notice this is the Shire Homesteads. And when we get out to the other maps, you'll see it. It is an extension of the map, but it's still a separate instance. In the same way that Dark Age of Camelot is a separate instance. So you're not actually having your houses in the same space in which gameplay occurs. That's the point I want to make to you here. Gameplay does not occur in the sense of the ongoing drama of Lord of the Rings or of Dark Age of Camelot in the same space. You come here to store things. You come here, and in this case, I have a crafting table. I can craft. I have vendors. I have a certain amount of decorations, but it's in Lord of the Rings. Professor Clayton described the mass customization of Star Wars, how you crafted the items. You controlled their placement in three dimensions. They have something here called hook points. There's only certain areas in which your house in which you can place an object. That's Dark Age of Camelot. Lord of the Rings Online, same situation, very much by analog. Much richer in complexity. We see a lot of activity in the auction house over the last couple days with people engaging in the economy, creating items to place. I'm trying to see if I can do this. These trees here are things that I placed. Notice a birch tree, it has a value to it. I placed them in my yard.
Could you steal another person's birch tree?
No, you cannot. You see these glowing areas? These are the hook points. These are where you can put an item.
We don't know that they won't allow that in the future.
I'm very confident.
Yeah, they don't really allow that in any game because all people do is just go around and loot stuff.
I would have been the worst offender in that particular vandalistic culture.
So your trees are too gold. I would steal that.
I would definitely be stealing some gold trees. There, you no doubt.
Kind of raise the price of.
But you get a sense of you can construct it. You can touch the environment, but they've really bounded the area in which you can explore it. Star Wars Galaxies made a design decision which I thought was fantastic. Lets you touch the world. That is a very different approach to narrative, because I can tell you a lot of the storyline that we developed, and you can laugh at and take seriously at various levels, people did, the value of that to the story. We had an Imperial story going on there on Rory. So there was rebels assaulting. We put a city right outside of a rebel installation on a rebel base so that we could have this combat occur. It created a lot of interesting stories of combat, rivalries. You know, the same type of rebel forces would attack the same Imperial forces, and it was interesting stories that were occurring. You're not going to get that here in the same way, but there will be a long and interesting future for LOTRO housing. Professor, any comments you want to make, or you want to see?
Interested to see Melicotones and Dedo online.
Yeah,
very impressive. Have you been? You want to take them over to the Kinship House?
I bought the kinship house,
and what this did by my buying it, it cost 14 gold.
Permanently instead of flat screens.
What?
It better have. Should have had flat screen for 14 gold. You're right. Mm-hmm.
And
Hobbit Golf on weekends broadcasting the flat screen.
And so when you can go, what it did for you.
I'm on Winding Way, so make sure I navigate properly.
Right, well, in the dark. What it did is that each of you will now find, when you go to your skill panel, a skill that you can then move down into the hot bar, toolbar, a travel to the kinship house.
Well, see, here we go. This right here, travel to the kinship house. It's a skill that's, let me show you where it's located. Under your skills, that'd be a skill associated
with housing. I think it's
there. It is with housing. So if you're looking for that,
travel to. So even though you don't have a personal house, you can travel to the kinship house.
Yeah, and if those of you played Warcraft, very similar to Hearthstone.
So you can go to the kinship house.
You need travel rations.
You need travel rations, which you can buy at a vendor. You can go to the kinship house once an hour. And then, of course, map back to your home. Or the other thing that's nice about the Shire Homesteads is you can run right out of it, and you're in Michael Delving.
For Myrtle Court.
So you get from this, you get a way to get to the Shire rapidly. So you should set your Hearthstone or whatever in Bree or wherever you want to be, and then you got good travel to the Shire.
What is that?
Now, what the glowy things are, the hook points. That's what I was showing you earlier.
Is there an upkeep one for the house?
Yes. Boy, is there. 275 silver.
Here's the upkeep cost, Chris.
85. Yep.
In Dark Age of Camelot, like if you're a member of a guild, you actually get taxed when you're out.
Well, I'm about to institute a tax.
Watch out. You want me to go inside?
I'll
here?
Need the guild.
Professor.
I'll go in debt.
It's like, I'm not getting taxed.
You're talking about failure in your course if you leave the guild. But you can say that I don't take those things personally at all.
That's what it is. It's a nefarious plot.
It's like slaves.
Well, you know, in Dark Age of Camelot, Daniel asked a question about can we put things to craft inside the kinship. At this point, I don't see any crafting tables. In Dark Age of Camelot, I could craft in the house. In Lotro, they've made a design decision to this point that, no, it's not available.
But
I think you will
be.
See this expand, Daniel, over time to accommodate that sort of activity.
So what can you put in the house? Anything cool besides, like, random doodads?
I guess other than just the tchotchkes you would put in to decorate things, it's more of the storage. You can buy a chest and put it in your house. Mm. So you get, like, about, I don't remember what the storage level is, but there's 20 items, and I'm sure they'll expand that over time.
Can I buy a chest and put it in the kinship house?
You can wander around and admire the kinship house.
All right.
I have several products.
You can have a kinship meeting in a kinship house.
So is it only high-priced authority to, like, edit things?
No, you can delegate... Old Spud Monkey asked us a question here. So maintenance of the house and permissions. I don't have permissions to edit it on Bumbleberry, but in this tab right here, you're going to see info, maintenance, and permissions. You can delegate permissions of various kinds inside the house. Anybody in the kinship can do X, Y, and Z. Any of your friends that you've specifically assigned can visit and so forth. So there's a great deal of granular delegation in the environment.
Wait, maintenance, like things break, or is that just like adding in? Taking away stuff. Okay, someone's running around. C-A.
That is Candy. Candy.
Look at that.
Look at Candy.
There's somebody that gets high marks for class participation.
Who's Candy?
Somebody in here.
That's me.
Oh, Professor Hall.
Yes, sir.
I am remembering Rory as being just outside of Rebel Outpost.
That's correct.
Correct. So I'm about to travel in my
own... Just go the opposite direction of the Rebel Outpost.
You have a speeder?
Right into
do
it.
I ever...
We own that whole
plateau. Can we go back to...
So, I'm in Bestine now.
You have a TIE fighter?
I have...
Who doesn't?
I have about
a TIE fighter.
I have about...
That's awesome.
Not only... I have several planes.
Yeah.
Really?
It's an incredibly complex and wonderful
game. Let's see what I've got here.
Used to being pretty awesome.
So, I've got a TIE fighter. I've got a... what do you call those little speeder things?
I don't know, but it didn't have a reactor.
I know, I took that out of there.
I bet it has a run.
Take some public transportation.
They have.
And my yacht. Shuttles. Do you see my yacht?
Oh, the yacht's a beautiful thing, too. That's hilarious.
You I don't want
to take the yacht.
No, I'm going to take the TIE fighter. It's too long. Okay, I'm going to take the TIE fighter and travel to...
Each one of these should travel in style.
See, each one of these worlds is completely different. You have Naboo. I'm not currently on Tatooine, of course, but Dathomir, Mustafar for the volcanic planet, if you remember from the movies, Endor, which is where the little
Ewoks,
and they have what's this up here? They've got the Wookiee planet. What's the name of the Wookiee planet?
Kashyyyk.
That's Kashyyyk up there, but you can't travel to it in your own plane. You have to take a shuttle, so it's not lit.
Oh, you can't get to it, though.
You can.
Can you get to all those little things?
Yes, and I'm going to take you to Rory, which is the small planet outside of...
And you're not a rebel, right?
No way am I a rebel.
Wait, is it two factions?
Yeah.
And that's how it's divided?
Yes, Imperial versus Rebel. Okay, so I'm Imperial.
So you're evil?
No, he's not Imperial.
No.
Evil.
Who's better at PvP?
So I think this is so slow that I'm going to give control back to you. Candy invited somebody to something.
Well, I think I don't have many more observations to do here. This, okay. Just the narrative experience, the story is very different. I think Daniel expressed it very well when he said, so what do you do in the kinship house? And my response was, well, I guess you can walk around and admire it. The social space inside of Star Wars Galaxies was actually a gameplay and story space as well. Now, this could easily be, for intense people who are engaged in role-playing, a place where stories could unfold on this stage. But more than likely, the levels and the styles with which most people play, it's not going to be the case here.
great meeting place.
Yeah, it is a great meeting place.
It's gonna
we'll use it as such.
It's a good way to get rid of your money.
And
it's a great hole in the ground.
So I had so yesterday I had to shell out 14 gold for that, and then my private house was 1.2 gold. So I'm.
Do you feel like a beach house?
How does a horse? Yeah, horse is expensive.
How much is a horse? Is it 2.4?
4.2.
Does anyone actually have that by the time they hit 35?
I did.
Just wait. I had 10 gold by the time I hit. Crafting a resource gathering is a way to make money. Resource gathering in particular.
What do you mean resource gathering?
Like, you get resource nodes, like wood and bears for the hides. I think Daniel hit on a big one.
Well, you can sell the hides.
Wolves are better for hides than bears.
Oh, really? Yeah, much better.
Is there a heavy hide?
There's a sturdy hide.
Sturdy hide, pristine hide, and exceptional hide.
And those are all worth a lot of money.
I should have sold all those when I didn't know what I was doing.
We can sell those at auction.
Yeah, that would have been worth a lot of cash.
Yeah, I know.
Or you can get them.
Live and learn.
How do you?
Okay, here I
go to the auction house.
It has like 13 silver. I could have made it 350. Of course, I shot myself. I probably dumped 500 items like that.
I didn't even know you could do it.
Okay. So, I'm in the middle of Rebel Outpost.
Look out!
I believe. I'm praying that I do not have my
PvP flag,
PvP flag on. This doesn't remind me of Rebel Outpost.
It's a Rebel Outpost.
There's a droid. Kill it.
Oh, I've killed it many times.
Kill him. Slice him up. Slice him dice.
Those are those are Rebel personnel.
You guys are...
Some Jedi you are. Yeah. Are you a pacifist?
No, I am a pacifist.
You're a non-PvP. So
he's threatening you.
Who is?
The guy. Look at that text box.
But the problem is, look at my toolbar down there.
What about it?
Don't tell
him. Ready to roll.
Attack. I don't have a single
Jedi's
attack.
Jedi's don't need attacks. They kill them with their mind.
Come on.
Okay. In fact, you do have mind attacks.
Force powers.
But they have to be slotted, and they're not. So.
And they're not slotted. Oh, who's that guy?
Slot him up and deal some indiscriminate justice.
Slot.
Rebel recruit? Drop their numbers at the source.
Aggressive negotiations.
Chris is ready to roll, too, man.
You guys.
Sign me up. Level me up.
They would have been good members of the Imperial Squadron there, right?
Deliver
now, Rebel Scum. Does that mean Sith as well? Or like,
they don't have Sith in this. This is sort of
the
Luke Skywalker days.
Yeah.
If you go straight out that entrance, Jay, and then
I wanted to whack somebody, and instead my interface is so bad. Look at how, it's not my interface. This computer is so unpowerful.
Drop your specs to like zero. Turn the shadows off. Turn the sky off.
No, the point is to show you the world.
Chris's point is to kill
Rebel Scum for Chris.
That's what the point is.
God, if you all stand still, I'll hit you.
Take out the recruiter.
Just remember, you're going to get ganked when it comes in if you touch any of those guys.
That's just a converse. Come on, I don't want to converse.
I want to slice.
Where's like interrogating?
Okay.
Slow torture.
Where's not happening?
Slow torture. Quick torture. Slice left leg. Slice right leg.
Professor Hall, I think it would be very good to have a class discussion about the New York Times article.
Yeah, I think Chris is just the guy to lead it. So Chris, I've got it backed up here behind us. So let's walk through it.
Why do they only quote old people?
Because the old people are the ones who cared.
Well, they're not going to be part of the discussion why old people are the ones who care. Go on up there and lead the discussion, Chris. I need you to get up on the keyboard there.
What do you want me to do?
There's a keyboard there. There's, you know, let's just take us down the article and talk about the salient points.
So. What do you mean?
Well, okay, for 2.5 years, let's talk about Emily. What was Emily's deal with 30 hours a week of gaming?
She used to play a lot, this game, and then she... Star Wars Galaxy, and then they modernized it or whatever, and she started
dumbed it down.
Come on.
Well, you guys talk about that. First of all, have any of you in this class played Star Wars Galaxies before?
I'm playing it for like a few days. My friend used to play it.
I've got a 0% showing except for Michael, who's done just a wee bit.
0.5.
Yeah, there you go. Math man got me 0.5%, so...
Math man. Now we refer to as math man.
Sorry, we're trying to rehabilitate that. So no one here played it, and now you guys are talking about the old guys. It's an old guys club. So there, what? How old is Miss LaBeth?
54.
54, the old guys club.
Triple R.
An old woman.
Yep, so old guys and old women. So Sony changed the product.
Talk about gender as well as age, please.
And I think it's very important. Miss LaBeth being a part of this, it's a different world. So let's parse this out one at a time. Why was the gameplay change at issue when everyone's saying dumbed down?
They wanted to make more.
They wanted to appeal to a younger crowd.
They wanted more instant gratification.
There were like 200,000 people.
They wanted to appeal to like a younger, more trigger happy audience as opposed to the
the leaving rate was higher,
than the normal 35%.
Yeah, the percentage that people left.
I think this is the thing: is top 200,000 subscribers at the peak of this. Star Wars had over 680,000 subscribers, so it was a large hit to their subscriber base, particularly when you juxtapose that to WoW. Right, you get over that 9 million mark today versus a 200,000 property. It's pretty substantial. So you had this game. I think Professor Clayton exhibited through the demo. Very complex, a lot of crafting, high levels of customization. That model of gaming appealed to people who grew up in a PC gaming environment in the 80s and 90s. Now, have a few more about this dumbing down. What do you think their goal was? Are they in the business of electronic storytelling and narrative?
No, they're just trying to make money.
So why would they make the change? The purely economic motives?
Yeah. And I guess if you take away some of the customization, does it make it easier and less expensive to maintain?
Absolutely. In terms of the that's a good observation. That technical architecture and infrastructure costs diminish if you make the game less complex.
I think they also mentioned that when people think of like Star Wars and Jedi, they think of just like fighting. So that's one of the other reasons they changed it.
They wanted to make it more true to the films.
Yeah.
Could you not be a Jedi?
Yeah, that's right. In other words, they wanted...
A bounty hunter, a combat medic, a doctor. There's a lot of professions. They went from a wide array of professions down to a very small number of professions.
You are one ugly purple frog.
Oh, look, you can see the purple frog. Now you're talking.
Isn't that Admiral Akbar, right?
It's Mon Calamari. It's Admiral Akbar. Scroll me down a little bit here. Professor Clay, let me know when you're ready to...
I can. Now I've got the camera chase, but I can't turn the bike any longer. Go ahead.
The joys of human-computer interaction. See what happens when they change it for 14-year-olds from us. We saw a lot of changes to the game. And that sentence starts with, we really just needed to make the game more accessible. Ted, read that out for us.
Needed to make the game a lot more accessible to a much broader player base, said Nancy McIntyre, the game's senior director at LucasArts. There was a lot of reading, much too much in the game. There was a lot of wandering around, learning about different abilities. We really needed to give people the experience of being Han Solo or Luke Skywalker rather than being Uncle Owen, Moisture Farmer. We wanted more instant gratification. Kill, get treasure.
Okay, let's hear that. I want everybody to hear that. Kill, get treasure, repeat. Kill, get treasure, repeat.
That just sounds so monotonous.
But that's like WoW swarming. They're pretty successful.
Yeah.
I just like whoever's quoted was up there. Robert Crux. So now, for them to take an adult level combat and economic simulation and turn into a mindless game for 10-year-olds is a violation of the community.
So what do you think about that, guys?
It's unfair.
To whom?
The people.
I think that
it's just a bad idea.
This gets to the point. That's the good transit point.
There's a quote earlier where it talks about, like, they said that it was like their second life. So it's like almost like taking a life away from them. Now it's just
something they put a lot of time and effort into, and then it's just.
And this has become very apparent in the Taylor article. Across from that, so go jump in, Chris.
Plus, it's like, I don't know, it's generally hard to get people interested in like an old MMO. It probably would have been like a better idea to just start up a new one and gradually wane that one off.
That's what I was thinking.
Why not like a Jedi expansion?
There's a point I want to make to you guys. We're dealing with a lot of topics here. We're dealing with an economic model of a firm who has its listed on a stock exchange. It's for profit. It's in the business of notionally storytelling, along with LucasArts, who is the producer of Star Wars and owns that intellectual property. So a mass, widely understood intellectual property, a large firm servicing the base, you've got some decisions. What are they about? They're about profit. And I think what Daniel and Chris and all of you alluding to is, what's their motive? Well, it's about cash. But is it fair? This is where Matt comes in. Is it fair that they basically had a covenant with a certain group that lived that Star Wars experience, loved it, invested a tremendous amount of time, and the economic concept here is called switching costs. You invest so much that it really, and you people with large, high-level characters in WoW have high switching costs, right? You don't want to leave WoW if you've got the highest-level characters with the uberous loot and so forth. These, you know, look at Jay's investment in his house. That's a lot of emotion tied up in that. That's a lot of, you poured your heart into it. Sony comes in and says, we're going to change everything, and we're changing it to what Ted just read. You know, and as Chris pointed out, a game for 10-year-olds when it was initially for something more complex, a simulation versus this, what, I can't remember what Matt called it, it's just fire and forget, kill them, whatever the...
Hack and slash,
right? So, is that fair for a company to do that?
Well, I mean, they have a responsibility to their stockholders and their employees, too, and if they're not making money, right. Then... So, I mean, you can't say it's unfair. But, I mean, it's unfair to one side, but it's fair to the other.
But did this fairness application of, you know, they're addressing this really yield success?
Well, isn't it kind of too early to tell if they just did this?
This is 2005.
Oh, 2005?
Didn't they say that got a terrible review?
Yeah.
80% were like, this is the worst thing ever.
12%.
Even the kids didn't.
12%.
The 10-year-olds didn't respond to Jeff's point. I mean, they really didn't respond. Come on, Peter, come in.
I mean, it's in the license agreement, though. That thing that's like 80 pages long that no one ever reads, it says that they can change it whenever they want to. And just like your mortgage says, if you don't pay, then we'll take your house. I mean, you can pour your life into your house, and if you know something happens and you can't pay your mortgage anymore, the bank will take it away from you.
Let me ask you a question there. Do you think your mortgage has a provision that says the bank can change any condition, any term whatsoever with no notice?
No, but Sony does have that provision.
Well, that's why I'm trying to make that discussion. I mean, that differentiation between a mortgage that is a two-way
property.
Contract and a contract that's only really one way.
And isn't all the discussions we had about narrative experiences that it's bidirectional, these MMOs, you change the world, you live in it, there's an equity piece. So keep going on that point. What points do you want
to
make on that?
I mean, I'm just saying that everyone agrees to their deals, and if you want to agree to play a game like Star Wars Galaxies, then they have the right to say, what, you sign the contract, they have the right to do their part of the contract, and if they want to change it, that's their prerogative. If you want a game where you control everything, then you're going to have to program your own or, you know, make a deal with a company or something. You're going to have to do more work than just go pick it up off the shelf.
It's going to be a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Any response to Peter on that? Anybody read the terms of service?
No. I've started reading a couple times, but I just like...
How far did you get?
First paragraph.
So, basically, if people are... Let's look at it this way. If we talk about personal responsibility as, yes, we should have stopped before we hit accept on the terms of service. But since everyone, and universally, I would say, and myself included, we don't read these terms of service... Did they really have a contract?
Well, you're supposed to read.
You said it.
As long as you say you agree,
check the box, or you
accepted
it.
So you think it's fair and binding? It's okay what Sony did to its player base?
Legally, yes.
As long as they play legally.
None of those customers are going to want to come back, all the ones who left, even if they make another game. It's just going to be like, we had this whole thing and you ruined it.
And this is what's legal, which I think what Chris is going in. You made a choice not to read it. You hit accept even though you didn't read it, right? Daniel, that's where Dana's talking too. Now, on the other hand, we've got a statement is that, all right, you made a contract with me, but reputational hits in the marketplace, I'm not going to come back to you after you betrayed my trust, whatever the legality of the contract read. Do you ever feel that when you're reading a story that you've been betrayed at the end of the story, how it turned out? Is it the same thing when an author disappoints you by the way the person wrote the ending of the story? You ever had a movie that started out or a book that started out in a certain way and you thought it was going to end up somewhere else?
Yeah. Movies especially.
Or how about after the story is clearly ended and she comes back and adds little details about Dumbledore?
Anyone else see that Facebook group invitation? Put him back in the closet?
Did you feel that way about Dumbledore?
No, it was completely unneeded, and all it's going to do is add more controversy.
That's the whole point. Because if people keep talking about it, then that's more exposure. Yeah.
Does a writer have a contract with you?
That's too negative.
Well, that's a good question. Does a writer have a contract with you?
No, they can write whatever they want. It's their words.
But you bought it.
Yeah, exactly. That's your fault if you don't like it after you buy
it's
it.
It's almost like an implied contract. Like you buy it expecting something, and you buy buy a lot of stuff from like this one author, like the Harry Potter books. You're expecting a certain thing, and so there's nothing like legally binding about it.
But you're expecting it. Are you going to buy that if that author? There's an implicit contract, according to Michael. Tim's point was,
it's bad for business.
It's bad for business. Are you going to come back if that author violates that implicit contract and gives you a bad ending that you didn't enjoy? Are you going to come back?
Most people do.
Go ahead.
Funny thing though is that she ended the series, so even though she's writing her little encyclopedia, the Star Wars Galaxies universe, to interact with it, you have to go to Sony. To interact with my imaginary Harry Potter universe, I just have to go into my mind.
Can you go write your own fan fiction?
So if she says Dumbledore is gay, that's fine. And I mean, I think really, I believe her when she says that when she wrote the books, she always imagined him being so. And then there's a lot of little things, if you read in Chapter 7, all his little problems make more sense if he falls in love with the guy that betrayed him.
Exactly, yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't really read into that when I read it, so I think she's adding more controversy, you know, just, I don't know why, just because, but... I mean, everyone has their own little imaginary Harry Potter world, and if it's not written in the book, then, even if it is, you don't have to accept it. But there's really no standing, so you can interact with your Harry Potter universe the way you want.
What about a movie? Who owns the movie? When you buy that ticket at the movie theater and go ready to sit down?
That's just the rights to view it.
You're viewing the rights to view it, so once they got your cast, they've checked out, there's no... I mean, is there one example you can think of where you're just terribly disappointed in a book, the way it started versus the way it ended?
Yeah.
Anything, Chris?
1984. I was really mad at, like...
I love that ending.
Sorry to spoil the ending, but I was so mad.
Spoiler alert.
So mad that he didn't, like, just stick it to the man.
War of the Worlds, the ending was just so abrupt. You know, it seemed like it just kind of came out of nowhere.
I was mad at the Matrix ending.
The Matrix fell apart after the first movie. In the
I liked the second.
The same movie was atrocious in every sense of the word.
I liked it.
So there's different contracts with you as a consumer of a movie, a book, and an MMO property?
Yeah.
Why?
Depends what you pay for, you
know what I mean? No, book. I mean, why is that the... When you use the word of contract, we're using it in various different ways. We're using it clearly in a legal sense. We're using it also in an economic sense. That is, you can make an economic contract without signing a piece of paper. So that if you hand over your money at somebody for an object, somebody has a kind of implied contract with you that you're going to get the object you've paid for. So there's economic contracts without writing, there's legal contracts. Then there's also the kind of implied contract that you can have that literary theorists talk about in terms of the narrative contract. Professor Hall has been driving at this through his questions, that an author does set up an implied contract with a reader. A movie maker does set up an implied contract with a viewer, and can violate those things in ways that can make the viewer or the reader very dissatisfied with the work of art. So you can... Haven't you said, well, but that movie cheated? Take care of it. Have you never had that thought? That they violated something, they cheated in some way or another against an implied narrative contract? So part of what is so perplexing about all of this is that Sony has absolute legal contractual right to do what it's done, but the property itself has invoked certain kinds of aesthetic contracts that we're used to having operate in other domains, and suddenly you discover that they don't operate. Take a look up at the screen. I found my biography of Cherubel Nickleby, and I'd like you to learn a little bit more about him. The Life and Times of Cherubel Nickleby. Descended from the benevolent Cherubel brothers, whose history was recounted centuries ago by the great writer Charles Dickens, Cherubel Nickleby aspires to be as kind-hearted as his legendary ancestors. Known as Cheery to friends and strangers alike, he has grown portly in his old age from a love of fine wines and rich foods. As a tadpole, Cheery dreamed of becoming a doctor. For many years, he practiced in Coronet Starport on Corellia. That was a place where you went to do buffs. And, in fact, Cheerable was extremely well-known in Coronet Starport for getting buffs. And you can see that he has... No, that you can't see it there. You can see here that he has 15 million credits in the bank from his lucrative days as a doctor. He practiced in Coronet Starport on Corellia, meeting countless memorable characters, most now deceased. Nemesis, Mustang, Delorvan, Tassos, Chaval. He often thinks of these old friends and tries not to grow melancholy.
They quit?
They all quit. The founders of Cheerable's line were once thought to be fictional humans from the mythical planet Earth, but Cheery's own research has revealed them to have been Piscine's denizens of a watery world. Now that he has retired from medicine, Cheery spends most evenings in his library in Mos Meseret, poring over the arcane volumes he has long collected.
Those intertextuality volumes really vex him.
Right.
How many hours do you think you put into this game?
A few.
New slash play.
Thousands. Thousands?
I don't know. I don't know if it has that feature.
Error. Too much time played. Playtime exceeds time games in existence.
Okay. A little bit. I wanted to talk with you about, briefly, about what we're going to be reading shortly. And here is one key passage from Taylor.
I'll tab over to it.
So they're talking about, Taylor is talking about in this passage here, trying to get it to the microphone here, he's talking about characters who feel like they have some property in the gang. And the passage I want to draw your attention to is the role of players as active, creative, core agents, not just in the consumption of the product, but in its creation. Can someone there read it so that I can you read that, anyone?
Yeah. Beginning right here and then to the end of the paragraph.
In both models, the role of players as active, creative, core agents, not just in the consumption of the product, but its creation, is underplayed. What is fascinating are the ways for many designers legitimating this kind of activity poses some serious threats to not only their game, but the status of MMOGs in general. As Brad McQuaid notes regarding auctioning, everybody in the massively multiplayer industry was certainly concerned about the situation. When people claim that having time invested in the game somehow gives them authority or ownership over elements of that game, we certainly have a situation that could threaten the entire genre itself.
That's an industry analyst there. What do you think they mean by role of players as active, creative, core agents in the creation of the product?
How they design their own houses.
That's a good example, yes.
People who made the game still made the basis for creating their own thing.
Well, here's another passage that I'd like you to read. Beginning the paragraph, it is, however, not simple.
What?
Continue reading. Can you see it?
Oh, yeah. It is, however, not simple. As we have seen, gameplay in MMOGs is a complicated mix of social and instrumental actions that are located not only in individual players, but among collectives. The boundaries of the game often are not recognizable because websites and fan forums push at them, providing invaluable information for actually playing. The collective production of game experience and knowledge does not simply constitute a helpful addition to the game, but is a fundamental factor in both its pleasure and sustainability. Most radically put, the very product of the game is not constructed simply by the designers or publisher, nor contained within the box product, but produced only in conjunction with the players.
That's enough, thanks. Talk about that last sentence there. Do we just have a moment more? Yes.
Well, I mean, if you don't have... The players are as much a draw as the game itself.
Thoughtbot, the essence is the interaction between players.
The players kind of shape... Like, the designers may have something in mind for the game, but the players will find out something they didn't think of, and they'll start, like, exploiting that and, like, change the world, kind of, and then the developers are going to have to adjust to it.
And so you all have very well unpacked that notion of how players in this space can be co-creators. I also want you to remember the term intertextuality that we discussed, which was the way in which a text reaches beyond its own boundary. That's the definition of intertextuality, that a book obviously has a text, but it also has connections to lots of other texts and other genres and media outside of itself. And this kind of experience takes it to the ultimate. So where you have fan sites, websites devoted to it, guild sites. You have, of course, properties such as the movies, the original Tolkien, that don't belong to the game maker. So there is an entire intertextual world that doesn't belong to the game maker, and that can be thought of as either being parceled out by a lot of individual owners, or could be thought of as shared space, communally constructed space. Think about that as you go home and prepare to write your next paper.